It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Hmong refugees fled genocide in Laos during the Vietnam War. Over the decades, thousands of Hmong Americans made their home here in Wisconsin. The Hmong Institute aims to help clinicians and advocates bridge cultural differences in healthcare at their upcoming health summit. You can call in with a question or comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Mai Zhang Vu is co-founder of the Hmong Institute, which organizes the Hmong Health Summit. Mai Zhang, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you, Kate, for having me.
Yes, and we also have Kajua Lohr, who is trainer for the Hmong Institute and associate professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin Pharmacy School. Kajua, welcome to you. Hi, Kajua.
Welcome, and
yes.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I want to talk about the summit that's taking place next week, and the theme is intimate partner violence. Mai Zhang, why go with this theme?
This theme has been an issue that's ongoing in the community, you know, since arrival. And, you know, like any human being, there's challenges in the family, but this has been a theme that I think increases more over the years as gender roles and role reversals play in our lives as part of the new American, you know, lifestyle in this country, where when we come here, you know, the husband alone cannot provide for the family and the wife need to go to work too. So that role reversal, you know, added some challenges to it as well. And over the years, the new assimilation challenges, acculturation added on to this. And we haven't really talked about it. There's been, you know, a few cases that, you know, pretty extreme. And it's time to, you know, talk about it as more and more providers are serving our community. It's important that they understand the health and healing concept in our, you know, Hmong community, especially when it comes to intimate partner relationships.
Mai Zhang, can I follow up there? Can you discuss with us or explain some traditional patriarchy in Hmong culture and what effects that could have on intimate partner violence?
In general, not to stereotype, but in general, our roles are very well defined. Mm. Back in the good old days where, you know, external affairs are the responsibility of the male and internal responsibility are the responsibility of the female. And we have birth order that is also saying if you're the oldest, you need to be a good role model, a leader for your sibling and so forth. So in that very defined tradition, when we come here in the United States, again, we have to provide for the whole family. And working in, you know, blue-collar jobs, you're not going to provide for a family of six if you're the husband. So then the wife has to go to work, too. And in that context, there's, you know, a lot of time spent away from each other that leads along, you know, communication gaps, supervision for the kids, so then that, you know, makes it hard for starting a new life when you have to make sure financially you're okay as well as culturally you're okay. And so over the years, as more women become, you know, workers in the workforce, that brings in a lot of challenges as well as when a lot of the external affairs are handled by the women, that also brings in challenges. So, you know, you have the best of both worlds together.
Thank you for sharing that and explaining that, you know, situation and scenario. Kajua, you know, the theme intimate partner violence, what comes up for you in the Hmong community and how do you see this theme?
Yeah, this theme of intimate partner violence is just of utmost importance for us to end the silence, you know, and have conversations around domestic abuse. There's been a rise of various cases of murder, suicide in the United States. The one most recent that I've seen is in March of 2023, and entire families, you know, and children are being left behind in these murder suicides. And I think it's just a call to action of what we can do to really provide culturally competent services for our patient, our the Hmong community, and then also thinking of.
Hope you're breaking up
for
just
the Hmong community to be able to access.
You're breaking up just a bit there. I'm going to reintroduce you as we talk about Hmong healthcare with two members of the Hmong Institute. That's Kajua Lohr, pharmacist, and Mai Zhang Vu. You can join in the conversation, call in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Rebecca in Manitowoc. Rebecca, hi.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is a subject that I deal with on a regular basis because I'm a home care physical therapist assistant, and I see a lot of geriatric patients, a lot of the Hmong community, and they don't usually speak English because they're first-generation refugees that came over their children English, but the translation has to be done for medical procedures and pathologies and things like that from a certified translator. So we end up calling translator services on the phone. It's very difficult. We have three, four people in a room trying to listen to a speakerphone, talking to them, them talking back. And the problem is there's a lot of words in the English language that don't translate to Hmong, especially medical terms. And people tend to fall through the cracks. We see a lot of people not getting proper medical care because of the language barrier. And it's very concerning when you're in the home and they're asking you multiple questions that have to do with their medical care that should have been answered previously, but maybe weren't understood due to the language barrier. So I have a very difficult time every time that we have to go through the translation services, treating patients.
Rebecca, appreciate you bringing that very personal on-the-job situation. Mai Zhang, what is your response to translation services?
Thank you, Rebecca, for bringing that up, and thank you for your patience in working with, you know, interpretation through the phone. Yes, this is a number one issue since, you know, we came here because of the language barrier. This is something that, you know, we continue to advocate for an in-person interpreter, but because there's no resources, providers don't hire Hmong interpreters or staff who speak Hmong, so then this becomes, you know, an ongoing issue. And, you know, when you look at this, it's about quality of care, right? Every one of us, when we go to the doctor, we should be able to have a communication that we are able to speak to and speak, you know, on a dynamic where we don't have to be stopped and then repause and then wait for someone to translate our message and then come back. And then on the phone, oftentimes you lose the interpreter and then there's another interruption because then you have to wait for them to get another interpreter, and it might be a different one. And so there's just a whole host of issue with, you know, having interpreters through the phone, and that's, you know, better than nothing, but it is not better at all when you think about quality of care for Hmong elders who, you know, need the service. And oftentimes we don't talk about it, but there's a lot of innocent people who go through dramatic experiences like having their private part cut off because somebody misinterpreted biopsy or, you know, a surgery. Or we early on have people who commit suicide in jail because the social worker did not understand the culture of coining and thought they abused the child who had purple and dark bruises on certain part of their body. And so interpretation has a lot of consequences in addition to just, you know, not quality of care for Hmong patients.
Kajua, what do you see in the pharmacy setting, especially in interpreting and care, inpatient care?
Yeah, as a primary care clinical pharmacist, I work with mainly Spanish-speaking communities, and also being a native Hmong speaker, language really connects, you know, connects people. And in, when you know the language, it can lead to better outcomes. But when you don't know the language, it can lead to, you know, feeling a disconnect with the providers and the team that you're working with, as well as the impacts, you know, of social determinants of health and language access and health literacy. And what I've learned is that there's so many commonalities, you know, with the Spanish speaking communities that I work with, that there is, you know, this impact of herbal medicines. It's very common within my own culture and with the Spanish speaking communities with curanderismo. I've learned about respeto, the family, you know, and how important family is, and respecting elders. So that we're all human at the end of the day. But that language is a huge barrier, you know, to access to care, as well as providing care that helps improve health outcomes.
That is pharmacist Kajua Lohr. We have Mai Zhang Vu, two members of the Hmong Institute, and you can be part of this discussion about culturally responsive healthcare. Call in with your question at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the Hmong Institute's upcoming health summit and how to deliver culturally responsive care and raise awareness among health professionals, especially when it involves intimate partner violence in Hmong communities. Call in with a question, share your views. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Folklore performer Mai Zhang Vu is former president of the Hmong Institute Board of Directors, and we have pharmacist Kajua Lohr, who's a trainer for the Hmong Institute. Kajua, let's turn back to the summit here. Wisconsin, being one of three states with the largest Hmong populations in the country, what are the goals of the summit?
The goals of the summit are to provide our trainees with the knowledge and awareness of the cultural practices in Hmong and health healing. We have an immersive experience where participants are able to even, you know, eat, speak, and breathe in Hmong and learn about Hmong tradition practices from various trainers, as well as a shaman, being able to try some Hmong food, and then learn about herbal medicines, as well as postpartum care and how it impacts, in this case, the main topic of domestic violence.
Mai Zhang, has the summit been successful in providing Wisconsin-based health professionals in promoting cultural sensitivity? What have you seen emerge from these gatherings?
It has been, very successful and impactful, where the design is a very small, intimate setting for providers to come together so they can be transformed after the training, where they're not only having the knowledge, but they have a better and more deeper understanding of why things have to be done in a culturally competent manner. So it is very impactful. I have a couple participants, for example, when we did one back in 2017, one of the psychologists at Access Clinic, Dr. Elizabeth, wrote back maybe 3 months after the summit, and she emailed and said, halfway into my visit with my Hmong patient, the Hmong patient asked me, where did you get your training? You must have some training about Hmong because you are really good.
Hmm.
And so she was really happy to hear that. Or we have like Dr. L who attended the training and he, you know, at the end said, I am so full of knowledge, but yet I'm so hungry for more.
Mm.
And when I ask him about what does that mean when he is so full of knowledge, but he's hungry for more. And he explained that, you know, he understood everything, but then he realized there's so much more that he doesn't know, that he needs to learn more because the culture and the acculturation and the systems challenges and the language barrier, all of this, you know, play together and compounded together in serving among clients. So he realized that, oh, with all this knowledge, I'm only beginning to know that I needed to do more in self-study and self educating myself. So that's when he refers to, I am still hungry, but I need more. And so, yes, the summit has been very impactful because, like I said, the design is a small group of people for 2 days. Like I just said, breathe and eat Hmong food as well as Hmong knowledge and sharing their own experiences and role modeling the situation and having interaction with a real shaman so they understand and can ask questions.
It sounds very immersive.
Yes, it is.
We're talking with two leaders of next week's Hmong Health Institute. Mai Zheng Vu there, recently retired from the State Health Department. Kajul Lohr is a pharmacist and an associate professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin School of Pharmacy. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Kajul, we were talking earlier about language barriers, but what about a history of trauma and how the Hmong community during the Vietnam War experienced trauma and how that might relate to their medical care today? Can you give any insights there?
Yeah, as a Hmong American growing up here in Wisconsin, I've experienced xenophobia as well as the social determinants of health that impact the Hmong community, from children serving as translators to the trauma, you know, of war. And the trauma-informed care, you know, is the evidence-based practice that's utilized to ensure, you know, we're more open in conversation and building relationships and trust. But oftentimes this trauma of war is not spoken, you know, within families. I know within even my own family and my dad, he was an orphan, you know, and being, not having, you know, grandparents growing up, I had one grandma. But thinking about my dad's own experiences serving as a secret soldier in the Vietnam War, but coming to the United States for a new dream, you know, the American dream, yet not being able to get benefits, right, of the veteran status or impacting the barriers from even getting housing, food, simple things to really build a culture of health. And I do think that many times refugees don't talk about their experiences of war, but there may be times where after you build trust and you have that connection, that you're able to, you know, transcend that conversation and talk about the things that might be troubling folks or the mental health issues, like post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, even seasonal affective disorder. And being out in the community, being able to do gardens and those pieces to really impact health of the communities.
As you're building trust, though, you have to discuss deeply personal, sometimes intrusive questions in the healthcare setting. How might a Hmong person feel about those questions?
I think at the end of the day, even simple things like saying hello in the Hmong language, Nya Zhong, having people take a seat. I recently actually had a patient that spoke French, is a refugee from the Congo. And what did I do? I had more time. I was able to spend more time with her. She had high blood pressure and was on 4 medications. Blood pressure was not under control. And I learned that she was the breadwinner of her family. She's the oldest of 11 children, you know, that she has 9 kids of her own. When she was in the Congo, she was a dressmaker in a floral, she made floral arrangements. And now here in Wisconsin, she's not able to go outside. And it was a middle winter when I saw her.
I want to just pause that story right there with Kajul Lore. We have Maijung Vu as well. You can join in 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin-based Hmong Institute presents its annual training summit for healthcare professionals working with Hmong communities, and the theme is intimate partner violence. You can be part of this conversation. Call in with a question, share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have 2 members of the Hmong Institute, Maijung Vu and Kajua Lore, are here. Kajua, you were talking about building trust and a story about how you made a connection to a patient's past to their medical situation today. What was that discovery like for you?
Yes, I discovered that trust is one of the key aspects. I learned a little bit of French. She spoke French, so I just said bonjour. And then I use the interpreter, our telephone interpreter. I learned she doesn't take her medications every day because she thought they were poisonous. And at the end of the visit, she said, I'll check my blood pressure. I'll take my medicine for my blood pressure. The next time she came in, her blood pressure was at goal. And I thought about the experiences, and I shared my experience. She shared her experience as a refugee, and that commonality, you know, that we have this, everyone has a story of their experiences coming to the U.S. And it's really taking off the white coat and being able to truly listen, you know, to the stories of our patients to provide care.
Maijung Vu, what do you hear in that story?
I'm hearing hope and improvement of quality of care for patients who don't speak the language. And that's really good because, you know, individuals like Kajua are the fruit of the labor of the parents who came to this country, you know, making a lot of sacrifices for a new beginning for their families. And now that we have, you know, a few professionals in the field, like Kajua, it speaks a lot to the efforts to improve quality of care for the underserved populations who mainly don't have quality of care because of access issue and language and culture issues. So that's a voice of hope in that story.
Let's bring on a call now. Amber is with us in Madison. Amber, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Amber. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm calling to ask your guests if they could speak to the issue of what non-Hmong healthcare providers need to know about how the clan structure shapes patients' comfort level with both Hmong and non-Hmong healthcare providers.
Kajua, do you want to start that? Go ahead.
Yeah, there are 18 clans in the Hmong community, and I realize that times are changing. I think there's an older generation, the younger generations, the people that have come to the refugee as refugees most recently, and clan structure is just of utmost importance for traditional Hmong weddings, family values, making decisions about health. And I think that's the piece that's sometimes the most difficult is hearing stories, you know, of patients that are waiting, for example, to get their an infection of their wounds closed, and trying to figure out like family values, you know, when do we wait for family to make the decision, or is it the individual's decision to do wound closures on amputation for those pieces? And how do you navigate, you know, the traditions around including family around decisions versus individual decisions, not violating HIPAA at the same time? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the thing that I can see that of the impact, you know, of the clan and the clan leader, as well as now the family unit and family decisions.
I also want to bring up here, and you mentioned earlier Mahjong shamans, and previously the Hmong Institute highlighted a shaman who participates in the summit training. How significant are shamans to Hmong medical care?
For the Hmong members who are still practicing traditional animism, it is very important because that is a spiritual piece that is a part of the healing. And so if we treat patients who are still non-Christian, we need to keep in mind and explore if they, you know, have a lot of practice within the family or not, because we have been here and a lot of people have acculturate and assimilate. So the biggest important part is recognize that it's still a practice, a healing practice, and providers need to ask their patient, is that something that they still do or not? And if they do, it should be a part of their, you know, treatment plan.
Kajua, how available are shamans in Wisconsin hospitals or other clinical settings? What do you hear in healthcare?
What I've seen is actually in California has more, and Minnesota has more immersion of Hmong shamans in the healing practices for patients. Here in Wisconsin, as a patient myself, I have three kids myself, and they had the chicken broth, you know, chicken diet available postpartum. So there is this move towards holistic care. It's just taking a little bit more time, you know, than what we anticipated. And I do realize that there are many health systems that are becoming, you know, more open, you know, to holistic health as well as providing access to care for patients to be able to truly heal. And the shaman being able to be the embodiment between the natural and physical world and the supernatural spiritual world helps in the healing process. I remember someone telling me, ooh, it's scary. But in the Hmong traditional culture, every living being is believed to be having a spirit. And the spirit can wander. And if there's trauma or even when you travel, your spirit can get lost. And these practices are to bring the spirit back. And what's interesting is the terminology and the verbiage is around mental health helping with heal those traumas that may have occurred as well.
Mahjong, what are common questions you hear when the conversation turns to shamans?
From the patient or the
from
provider?
The patient or
from the patient?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about trust. Would the provider trust me enough to also provide another arms of healing for me? Do they respect my way of practicing my traditional healing? So there's a lot around the trust issue, and many times, like Kajua said, Wisconsin is not as proactive in the immersion, so patients very rarely have the opportunity to have the shaman ritual done for them at the hospital, and that's very sad. I have helped with
for example, at Mandela Institute a while back, where a Hmong client over there needed and asked for shaman ritual, and I have to step in to help them understand what does that mean, and then go to Mendota and look at the facility and see how can they bring a shaman in. And of course, the system is not, you know, set up for that. So there's a lot of barriers, like facility, like in Mendota Institute, the security is just, you know, too high to do anything as such. And so, yes, this speaks to trust and barriers in serving Hmong clients on a culturally competent manner.
That's Mai Zhang Vu, recently retired from the State Health Department. Kujua Lohr is a pharmacist and associate professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin School of Pharmacies. We talk with leaders of the Hmong Institute on next week's Hmong Health Summit. And you can join in the conversation at any point. Call in with a question at 800-642-1234. Mai Zhang, you say an important aspect of Hmong healthcare is medicinal use of dry herbs. Can you provide a few examples of important dry herbs?
Dry herbs are something that we use regularly, just like over-the-counter aspirin, right? When you have a headache, you pop it in. In dry herb, there's roots, medicinal roots that you dry, and you can brew it like a tea and you drink it, or you can massage it, and it's used for all, you know, purposes, from as small as a headache to as big as massaging yourself so you get better in strokes. So for example, I was just talking to a relative who had a stroke, and his left arm and left hand and left foot were all paralyzed, and he couldn't get up. And so his wife's family from Laos sent some dry herbs and cheap oil, and washed him with it, you know, a couple times a day for that. So for a combination of that as well as the rehab therapy, he is now able to walk again. And he's very thankful for that. And, you know, shipping dry herb is expensive, but in this case, as he said...
I want to... You're breaking up just a bit there. I want to turn to Kajua, as you are in pharmacy. And what about the cultural importance of dry herbs while also balancing Western medicine medications?
Yeah, herbal medicinal use is very common in underserved communities, and even Hmong communities and the Spanish-speaking communities that I work with. And what's interesting about herbal medicines is that these herbs have been used, you know, traditionally, historically, in many different cultures, Native American cultures, even African cultures, has these uses of these herbs. And then the herbs have been, some of them have been synthetically modified to be medications, right, within the medications that we use, paclitaxel, for example, digoxin, which is for heart rhythm. And these are just some parts, you know, of the herbs that are used. And so at the end of the day, these herbal medicines really help with health and healing. Sometimes they're brewed as teas. Sometimes it's fresh herbs, not necessarily dry herbs. If you go to an herbalist, they have a chota, which is a altar, you know, for herbal use. And then if they are a true herbal medicine healer, they can actually share with you, you know, what are the different plants that they have in their garden, in their greeneries, which plants to pick, which arm to use to pick the plant, because it actually is important based off of gender. And then also, how do you brew the teas, or do you boil it with an egg, like a steamed egg? And so I've learned, my family comes from a traditional Hmong herbal practice. I have a great aunt who picked the Hmong herbs and gave, you know, brought them over from Laos. And it's just very interesting to hear about those traditional Hmong practices. The most commonly used is actually postpartum, the 30-day chicken diet called Nyon Duo Li, and the number of herbs that are used, the importance of health and healing, and the concept of hot and cold to ensure that in the future you don't have any sicknesses or illnesses. And as a researcher myself, I would look up, you know, is there any truth to the chicken diet? Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting because I learned that there's other cultures. I think there was a study done in Mexico that stated the chicken broth diet actually increased milk supply to even some of the practices of staying home. You know, you're supposed to be staying home for 30 days. And I thought about the pandemic and those pieces and how you stay home so you protect your baby and the mom to heal for 30 days until you can, you know, leave your home. And those are just some things that I've learned along in my professional career, as well as in my personal, you know, life, having children myself, about the practices of herbal use.
Oh, putting so much information together there. Pharmacist Kajua Lor, trainer at the Hmong Institute. Mai Zhang Vu with us, former president of the Hmong Institute Board of Directors, as we talk about the healthcare summit ahead. Call in with a question or a comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A training summit later this month for healthcare professionals seeks to improve cultural competency in serving the Hmong community's healthcare needs, and the theme is domestic violence. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234. We have pharmacist Kajua Lor, who is a trainer for the Hmong Institute, and Mai Zhang Vu is here, former president of the Hmong Institute Board of Directors and one of the organizers of the Hmong Health Summit. Mai Zhang, Hmong refugees fled genocide in Laos in the Vietnam War. What resources are available to help with mental health issues, such as post-traumatic stress disorder?
Not a lot, but it's better than 10 years ago, where we now have a few Hmong therapists who are trained, and we have been advocating. So now we have a warm line for the Hmong community so they can call in and navigate treatment services, as well as helping them. At the Hmong Institute, we are a mental health program under the CCS program, which is Comprehensive Community Services. And so we're starting to have, you know, a conversation that can also have quality of care that we can do, and that is we hire professional bilingual services staff that can do the job, but it's still very minimal. In communities that don't have agencies like the Hmong Institute, they are still relying on interpreter, but for mental health, many of them don't show up in the system because back to the trust issue, there is no trust in the system. So, you know, when you go there, you're not going to come back. So people may go to the county system or whatever system they have, and they never go back because they're not being understood. People don't understand their language and don't have the people that look like them. So the trust issue is a big, big issue. So, you know, bottom line, we are making, you know, some stride, but there's still a lot of mental health treatment and mental health services that we need in order to provide quality of care for, you know, our elders who made a lot of sacrifices for us and now are going through the PTSD and, nobody's, you know, seems to understand them. So, yeah, there's a lot of need, yes.
A warm line, though, still necessitates that one must reach out and ask for assistance. Is that difficult in the Hmong community?
It is, because, you know, the system, you need to understand the system. And I often say, I worked for the faith all my life, and I have yet to navigate all the system and be able to penetrate that. So think about someone in the community who don't even understand their own community system, and having had to have somebody explain all the different, you know, specialty for them. It's crazy in terms of overwhelming and scary for them, because they don't understand. And especially if they have, you know, doctors who prescribe medication for them, is like the stigma itself is also a hurdle, because you don't want to be seen as taking crazy pills because you are crazy. You know, so there's just so many factors and elements that make the barrier such a challenging one.
Could you, as a researcher, you use a community-based participatory approach, you know, researchers and community participants involved together. Are you able to get breakthroughs there? Why this approach?
Yeah, this approach of using community working with communities to really learn about different health topics has been really helpful for expanding, you know, the needle and moving the needle in the positive direction. I think Maijong is speaking to also the importance of navigators and community health workers in the Hmong community to figure out this healthcare system that we have to be able to access health and get medications. And what I've learned in working with community and incorporating community voices is that truly understanding the community is the way to really achieve health equity and really build a culture of health, is sitting with the community, learning about the stories and listening to what the community needs are to really have a true impact to build health equity.
Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Kajua Lohr, member of the Hmong Institute and associate professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin School of Pharmacy. Maijong Vu, co-founder, former president of the Hmong Institute Board of Directors, also a folklore performer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.